Okay, so we are going to learn tonight Parshas Vayechi, the thought of like missing two Parshios in Bereishis, even not feeling 100% didn't sound like a good plan. Maybe if this had been like Vayikra, my thoughts would have been slightly different, but wanted the opportunity to learn. I want to share with you an idea by Rabbi Et Shalom. It's actually, usually I read Rabbi Et Shalom, but I actually listened to him from Layu Torah. It was a really interesting analysis. So let's take a look at it together. I want to take a look at 22 Psukim and try to understand what exactly is going on. There are plenty of questions that one can ask on these Psukim. So for sure, feel free to ask away. I did highlight a couple of things purposely because those are, you know, to kind of like point our attention towards certain things. But as always, all psukim and all questions are fair game. So vayi acharei advarim la'ela vayomer liyosef hinei avicha choleh vayikach et shnei banav imo et menashe v'et Ephraim. So after this, so this is after Yosef, and after Yaakov initially gets there. So it's told to Yosef that his father is sick, and he takes his two kids with him, Menashe and Ephraim. Vayagel Yaakov, vayomer hinei bincha Yosef ba'ilecha, vayitchazek Yisrael vayeshev al amita. So Yaakov hears this, and he's told that your son Yosef has come to you, and he strengthens himself up to sit on the bed. Vayomer Yaakov Yosef, Kelsha Kai Nirai Lai Beluz Beretz Kanan Vayavarechosi. So Yaakov says to Yosef, takes him on a walk down memory lane. He said, God came to me in Luz, in Eretz Kanan, and he blessed me. Vayomer Lai, Hinini Mafrecha Vyurbiticho Netaticho Lekahala Mim. And he said to me that I will make you fruitful and plentiful, right? Pru or Vu. And I will make you a kahal amim, right? A gathering of nations. What does that sound like? It sounds like he's not one nation, but he's like a multitude, right? Venatati et haaretz hazot lezarachacha recha achuzat olam. And I'll give this land to you and your children after you as an achuzat olam, as a eternal holding. Okay. So, why do we have to go back to Luz, right? That's my first question, right? God has appeared to Yaakov a lot of times. He appears to him before he goes to Haran, after Haran. He appears to him in Be'er Sheva on the way down in Vayigash. Why is it that he comes to him Dafka, or actually, why is it Yaakov Dafka refers back to his conversation with God at Luz? What was important about that conversation that he had? Then he continues and says, "Vatashne b'nechon oldim lucha be'aretz mitzrayim abu'i elecha mitzrayim aliheim." So your two sons, the ones that you had in Egypt before I got here, Ephraim and Menashe, I'm sorry, liheim are mine. Ephraim and Menashe kereuvein v'shimon yuli. Ephraim and Menashe will be like Reuven and Shimon. So also, like, what's going on here? Why is it he's taking these two kids to the exclusion of the rest of them? Meaning, if Yosef were to have more children, which we don't see that he did, but if he were to have a third kid, that third kid would not have the status of Ephraim and Menashe like Reuven and Shimon, but would simply be part and parcel of Shevet, the greater Shevet Yosef. And yet, Ephraim and Menashe get this elevated status. So again, next question is, why is that the case?
Well, it couldn't be. I don't know if it's only those two. I mean, if he had three, it could be Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, yearly.
No, but Yaakov is saying it's Dafka, these two kids. Not meaning if he had had a third kid already.
He's like a Bechor. This is his way of expressing to him that he's a Bechor. And he's putting, I mean, this is all leading up to his demand or the promise of Yosef, not only because he's the ruler of Egypt, but because he's bestowing on him the responsibilities of a Bechor. So he's giving him the double portion by adding these two kids to replace himself. He's getting a double portion relative to everybody else. and he's expressing to him, and therefore I expect you to be responsible for my burial wishes.
He already got that before this.
He's reiterating it.
Okay.
Right. So again, the question would be why if he had a third kid after this? Not meaning if he had a third kid.
Very hypothetical.
Well, it is very hypothetical, but Yaakov is very, very hyper-focused in what he says. These two kids that were born prior to my arrival here in Mitzrayim, they're mine. Right? So that's, he's saying, that's to the exclusion of any subsequent children that you're going to have afterwards.
Well, because he identifies with them. These are guys who grew up and stayed relatively, stayed Jewish in the face of a nation. Like when Yaakov was in Laban's house, he identified with them.
Okay.
No, but they're the only two that are, we believe they're the only two that are alive at this moment. Yaakov knows he's going to die. He's giving a blessing to these two because they are there when he's there.
Okay.
Oh, I see it too.
They're all down already, no? Oh,
all right.
Isn't
Hamashmacha
down?
Yeah.
No. Why does he have to say they were born before I got here? What's the point of him saying they were born before I got here? Everybody knows that. There's something to that.
Well, I think it's, we both speculate, but I think it's also part of the promise.
It's obvious.
That God's saying the nation that is going to be exiled, that you're going to be going down to Mitzrayim as part of this process. So this is a point in time. When you get to Mitzrayim, or the people that move from Canaan to Mitzrayim, they're the ones. That is the foundation of the Jewish people. So that's what he's saying. Before I got here, that's why these two qualify. If there's the third one, they wouldn't qualify.
Okay. I mean, I guess the question would be, which is completely theoretical, would be, what if there was a third kid already born? What would the status of that kid have been? Right? So, I don't know. I guess there's no way to answer that question, so it's completely academic. Pasuk Vav. U'molatcha sholat acharim achayu al shem achem yikaru b'nachlatan. And anybody that's born afterwards will be called on the by Ephraim and Manasseh, and they'll get in their inheritance. V'ani b'voi mi'padan aram, v'ani b'voi mi'padan meit alai Rachel be'eretz Kenan. But Derech Bo'ud Kibrat Eretz Lavo Ephrata Be'ek Sham B'Derech Ephrati Beit Lachem. And he says, and I just want to let you know that when I was coming back from Haran, Rachel died in Eretz Canaan. She was just a little ways away from Ephrat, and I buried her on the way to Ephrat, which is in the city of Beit Lachem. So also, like, that's like right, like, why is he going on this, like, history lesson here? And then, Vayar Yisrael B'nei Yosef, Vayomer Mi'ele. Yaakov looks at the B'nei Yosef and says, who are these kids? That's also weird, because what did he just say?
They're his.
They're mine.
Right, but these two kids that were born in Pasuk Hey, they're mine. Now he's saying, who are they? So, Vayomer Yosef Elaviv, B'nai Heim, Asher Natan Li Elokim Bazeh. These are the kids that God has given me. So he says to him, I want you to take them and bless them. So also, like, really weird. Yaakov's eyes were heavy from old age and he couldn't see. He brings them towards him. So that's Yosef is bringing them towards Yaakov. He kisses and he hugs them. Say that again.
Yep. Sounds like Yitzchak.
Yeah.
What he did to Yitzchak.
Well, the exchange. Right, the episode.
Yeah.
Okay. Although this time there's no duplicity, right? He's honest and upfront, tells, you know, what's going.
It's gonna be a role reversal.
All right. So Vayomer Yisrael al Yosef, for Opanach lo pilalti. He says, Yaakov looks at Yosef, or Yisrael looks at Yosef and says, your face, I never thought I would get to see. And now, not only do I get to see you, but I get to see your children. Yeah, and Yosef takes them out from his knees, and he puts them, and they bow down on the floor in front of him. Vayikach Yosef et shneihem et Ephraim b'mino mismol Yisrael v'Menashe b'smolo mimin Yisrael. And then he places the kids out. So Ephraim is on the right, to the left of Yaakov, and Menashe is on the left, to the right of Yisrael. Vayigash elav. And then he brings them closer. So we have a picture here, right, of Yosef taking a kid from his knees, right? So how old should these kids be at this point?
22. At least 18.
Right. So
before Yosef got there, he's been there 17 years.
Right, and they were born before the famine.
Yeah.
So you're talking about 17, you're talking about 19, they're 20-year-olds. Right? So imagine the picture, right, like in your head. If you're in shul, right, and the rabbi comes over to shake hands, pre-corona, of course, with like you, and you have your two 20-year-olds on your knees.
Right, like, what do you mean? If your grandfather is 147 years old, and he has them on his knees.
Yeah, the whole thing is weird. Right? Like, isn't that a strange picture? Like, if we were on the outside looking in, we probably would be a little bit concerned with this whole, like, picture. Right? I don't know how comfortable we would be. Now, you could just argue that it's a societal norm, and those norms have changed. But I think it is important just to note that when we think about how old these kids are, they're teenagers or older, and they're sitting on their father's lap.
They also hold the Yerach wants to make a shula, so.
Yeah, but, right. I mean, that is weird, but that at least you can say is like, it's a cheftza shel mitzvah, you needed it to be something binding. I mean, it's like very uncomfortable.
And say that today too, but it's not going to be happening.
Yes. Right, but still, I don't know. Somehow, like, It seems a little bit strange, which I think is a fair question. We could leave it and say it doesn't bother us because it was a different time, but we could also at least note it and wonder. So what happens? Pasuk Yudalit, Vayishlach Yisrael Yimino, Vayashad al Rosh Ephraim, Vuat Tzair. So Yaakov takes his right hand and puts it on the head of Ephraim, and he's the younger one, mind you, but Smolo al Rosh Menashe, and the left hand on the head of Menashe, Sikeli Adav, he flipped his hands, Ki Menashe Bechor, because Menashe was the older one. Vayvarechet Yosef, he blesses Yosef, Vayomar, and he says, Halokim asher hitalchu avotai lefanav Avraham v'Yitzhak, Halokim areo uti meodi ar yom hazeh. So he blesses him and says, the God of Avraham and Yitzhak, that was the shepherd to me from, you know, from when I was younger until this day, Hamalacha goeloti mikol ra yivarechet ani arim bikarei behem shemi. So this angel that redeemed me from all evil should bless these kids, bikarei behem shemi, and he should call them by my name, v'shem avotai Avraham Yitzchak v'idgularov bekarev haaretz, and the names of my forefathers Avram and Yitzchak, and they should be plentiful on the earth. Vayar Yosef, what happens? Vayar Yosef, Yosef sees ki yashit aviv, yad yimino rosh Ephraim, that he flipped hands. Vayera beinav, and it's bad in his eyes. Now this is one of those moments where Yosef, of course, is able to say, hey, wait, dad, didn't we do this already? Right, like, why are you going back down this road? It doesn't make any sense. You did this with me, you favored me, and look how that ended up. I don't want you doing this with my kids. So Vaitmoch Yad Aviv Lasiro Tomeal Rosh Ephraim Rosh Menashe. So he kind of tries to steer the right hand off Ephraim's head onto Menashe's head. Vayomer Yosef El Aviv Lochain Avi Kizeh Bechor Siminchal Rosho. Dad, this is not good. Put your hand on his head because he's the Bechor. Pasuk Yutet. Vayima'ein aviv, and his father refuses. Vayomer yadati bini yadati. Says, I know. Gam hu yela am. He's also going to be an am. Vegam hu yigdal. And also he's going to get bigger. But his younger brother will be greater. The Zaro, yeah, Melo Hagoyim. And his children will be Melo Hagoyim. They're going to be large numbers. So what's the back and forth with Yaakov? What are they doing? And what's Yaakov's answer? That Gam Hu Yelam, he's also going to be an Am? What is an Am? And really, is it true? Right? Does it really work out that that Ephraim is bigger than Menashe? If you look at their Nachla in the land of Israel, Ephraim gets less land. If you look at their numbers, Menashe has more people. So it doesn't seem like the bracha happens. Which kind of makes us feel a little bit like, if you take a look at the last source, there's another bracha that we know in Sefer Bereishis that seemed to, say something, and yet, in the end, it's not so clear that that bracha worked out that way. Rav Yom Hashem La, Shnei Goyim Bevidneichu, Shnei Lumim, Mimayichi Paredu, La'o Melom Yematz, Rav Yavod Seir. Right? We have another one where the younger one is supposed to be greater, and the younger one is supposed to be more successful and more powerful, and yet, it does not seem to be that way. Right? It does seem that there is a large part where Esav is the one that's more successful. So what's up with that? So now Pasuk Chaf, Vayivarechem bayom ahu leimor, b'chay yivarech Yisrael leimor, yisim chalokim kefraim v'chemenashe. So he blessed them on that day, saying, this is how people will bless the Jewish people, yisim chalokim kefraim v'chemenashe. That Hashem should make you like Ephraim and Menashe. And Rabbi Yat Shalom points out that this is one of the oldest Jewish minhagim. Right? This goes back all the way to the times of Yaakov Avinu, and people still do it to this very day. So, but now, I never noticed this. Take a look at the end of the pasuk. Vayasim et Ephraim lifnei Menashe. He put Ephraim before Menashe. So what's the obvious question?
Menashe got the better deal.
Okay, so that's one part of it, is that it seems that Menashe got the better part of the deal. So what does that really mean? But just from a simple standpoint, he put Ephraim before Menashe. Do I need those words?
No, they already said it three times.
Right. And in the pasuk itself, Yisim Chalokim, Ke Ephraim v'che Menashe. He makes it very clear. You should be like Ephraim and Menashe. So if that's the case, that you're already saying that you have to be like Ephraim and Menashe, then why afterwards say that he put Ephraim before Menashe? So I'm going to quickly just open up a Chumash to look, because Rabbi Etshalom quoted Rashi on that I kind of was like a little bit surprised, because it did not even ring a bell. So he says, what does it mean? Ah, excellent. So what are we talking about? Bevir Chato. He blesses him first, in his bracha before Menashe, lagdimo b'degalu mechanukas hanasim, to say that he was going to be ahead of him in the degalim and in the chanukas ha-mishkan. Right? So basically, he's going to the times of Moshe. In the times of Moshe, Ephraim would be the one that would come before Menashe. Vayomer Yisrael, say again.
Yeah, wouldn't you expect that outcome based on the bracha?
Right. So, but at least what Rashi's pointing out is the Vayasim at the Ephraim lefnei Menashe is not in this moment, because that's obvious. We saw it already. So it has to be talking about something different.
Right, but this is the bracha that everyone's doing generational. And when it came time to assign the camps, the golem, and the order of the karbanos on the Chanukah Samishkan, wouldn't you automatically put Ephraim before Menashe? If this was the bracha that you've been saying for the last 300 years or whatever, 200 years?
I guess. But I guess if the pasuk has to be talking about something, then it would be not talking about this moment, but it would be like reflecting forward, which is where Rashi's coming from.
You can say the brachas make them equal, Ephraim and Menashe. You're like in this one and you're like that one. It's not Ephraim and Menashe. They're the same. He's not that, maybe the point. The brachas. Rafa is saying that you should be like each one of them is separately, not as one after the other.
Uh-huh. I hear. I mean, I guess one of them has to be listed first. And the fact that Ephraim comes first, even though that's counterintuitive since he's younger, would give him a slight edge. But yeah, I hear. So, I mean, if you read it that way, Greg, then you need the last couple words of the pasuk.
Right.
Okay, so Chaf Aleph, Vayomer Yisrael Yosef, Hinan Ochi Meit, Vayalo Kim Imachem, Yaakov says to Yosef, I'm going to die, God will be with you, Veshivetchem El Eretz Avotechem. And you should come back to the land of your fathers. And I am giving you Shechem Achad, one Shechem, on your brothers, that I took Miyare Emori from the hands of the Emori with my cherev, my sword, and my bow. All right. So what's that talking about? Are we talking about literally the city of Shechem? It could be. There is a Mesora that Yosef is buried in Shechem. So that would, if that's in fact the case, it could be Shechem Achad. But it could also be a Shechem is a portion. You get one more portion on your brothers. Okay. So we have a lot of questions. Are there any other questions on these psukim before we try to answer some of them? No, we're satisfied. Okay, so let's start off trying to understand some of the weird parts of the story. Mi'ela, you just introduced yourself as knowing who these kids are, and then you ask who they are. And what's the deal that they're on his knees? They seem like little kids, and yet chronologically, they're probably in their 20s. So, which one is it? So, Rav Elchanan Samit says that there are sometimes in Tanakh where we merge two stories, right? We don't need necessarily to have two separate stories, so we kind of mix them into one. So he says, what's going on here? There's actually a story at the beginning of the parasha where Yaakov meets up with Yosef, and you would assume at that point in time that he would have met the kids then. And then it would have been much earlier. He wasn't sick yet. He wasn't old yet. It's likely, says Rav Samit, that that's actually when a lot of this story happened. Initially, he meets up with them and says to them, hey, like, who are these kids? I've never met my grandchildren. So he meets his grandchildren. He gives them this bracha, right? He does all of these things, and that's fine. But now that separates from the fact that he also has to deal with Yosef and some of his end-of-life issues. And maybe Ephraim and Menashe were part of that to some extent, but the bracha and who they are and going on their knees and being told that they're going to be Ephraim and Menashe like Reuven and Shimon, that is perhaps a separate story. So he does break up the story, and that helps us a little bit. But Rabbi Echelom, though, says, we have to understand what exactly is going on here between Yaakov and between Yosef. And we also have to understand what is really Yosef's, Yaakov's goal at the end of his life. So he says to understand that, we have to kind of try to figure out why is he going back to Luz. So what happened at Luz? So let's take a look at the middle source. Vayera Elokim el Yaakov od bevo mipadan Aram veyvarech oto. So God comes to Yaakov when he's on his way back from Padan Aram, and he blesses him. Vayomer lo Elokim shimcha Yaakov. So God says, your name is Yaakov. Lo yikare shimcha od Yaakov. We don't have to call you Yaakov anymore. Kim Yisrael yashemecha. Your name will instead be Yisrael. Vayikrat Shemo Yisrael. And he names him Yisrael. Now, of course, we know that this story takes place just after he met up with Esav. And when he wrestles with the Sarushal Esav, he gets the name Yisrael. But now God is coming to him and saying, no, this is really your name. Vayomer lo Elokim, ani kel shakai, Prayrevei goy ukahal goyim yamimeka. So he says to him, I am God. I want you to be fruitful and multiply. You're going to have a nation, ukahal goyim. A assembly of nations will come from you. Umlachim michalatzecha yetzeyu. And kings will come from you. And the land that I gave to Avram Yitzchak, and yet, that I promised to Avram and Yitzchak, I will give to you and your children after you. You will get. I will give you the land. Pray, Reve.
By the way, it says,
well, he did, right? Avram got a piece, and Yitzchak was slowly, you know, taking a little bit of that, right? So. We have that, right? Where do we have that? Right, we had it up in Pasuk Dalet, right? It's not far off, right? So what's the difference? Prayer vei, mafrachav yirbiticha, same thing. Right, I want you to be fruitful, multiply.
Kahal and Amim.
So the only difference is what, right? In one, it's Kahal Amim, and the other one is Kahal Goyim. So what's the difference? What is an? I guess the question is, what are Goyim? So Goyim are nations. He's told his kids, his family will become a nation. The problem is. At this point in time, how many sons does he have?
12.
Nope.
No, at this point in time, he's 11.
Right. In Perek Lamed, hey, when he meets God at Luz, what does he have? He has 11 sons. So when God says to him, Kahal Goyim, right, you're going to have this assembly of nations. Who's left? It's just Binyamin. But that's not a Goy. That's not Kahal Goyim. That's not Prayer of A. That's, you're only going to have one more kid. So Yaakov kind of looks and says, wait a second, what is the purpose of God's bracha, and what am I going to do with it? So he says, God is telling me I'm going to be a kahal goyim. I'm going to have a nation. Well, what exactly does that mean? And what is an am, or, you know, that he changes it to? So the first time that Bnei Yisrael are called an Am is where?
Am
Ksheorev. Okay, it's true. We are called an Am Ksheorev, but we are actually called an Am before that. So Paro calls us an Am, right? What does he say? Hine Am Bnei Yisrael Rav V'Atzum Imenu. What's he saying there? What's an am? So if we translate it as a nation, it's Am Bnei Yisrael, the nation of the children of Israel. But it's redundant because Bnei Yisrael would be, by in and of itself, the nation of Israel. Why do you have to say am? So Rabbi Yat Shalom says that part of the problem of Tanakh is that sometimes when we read a word, we assume that we know the meaning because we speak Hebrew. But the context of what we use as Hebrew isn't always the same. So he gives a good example. The word ratzon means one thing to us, and in Tanakh it means something else. So am, we typically view it as a nation, but what Paro really is saying is the army of the Jewish people is Rav Yatsu Mimenu. They're stronger than us and that we're going to lose the war. Yaakov says, I actually know, in Perek Lamed, hey, God is telling him, Kahal Goyim, right, you're going to have a nation, it's going to be an army, and they're going to conquer what? The land of Israel. From Yaakov's perspective at that point in time, he does not anticipate that he's actually going to have to go into exile. He doesn't anticipate that he's necessarily going to go into Egypt. And he's thinking, we just were in exile. We just came back from exile. It's possible that what's about to happen, we're going to conquer the land of Israel. If we're about to conquer the land of Israel, What is my army? My army is my children. But Yaakov understands now that actually it didn't play out that way. The Jewish people went down and are in Egypt. But now, once again, he's going to need an army. So he says, Netaticha lekahal amim, I need an army of nations. Who are going to be I need an army of people. Who's going to be that army? It's going to be my kids. Where can I add to my army? So he decides that he's... Yeah, someone...
So you're saying Rabbi Eshelon is defining Am as army?
Correct. And when he says okay, he...
But the problem, as you were told us many, many times, you would set the definition of the word for all the remainder of Tanakh by how it's used its first time. So if it's used there for the first time, then every subsequent time you have to define it as Am as army. And clearly we've used Am in Sukkim for months and years together, we never said army before, so we have to go revisit all those, make sure it makes sense, or else you can't do that.
Well, anybody who's in quarantine definitely has, you know, what to keep busy with over Shabbos.
It doesn't mean army.
As an example. That's a fair one. All right, I'm going to... I will. I hope he answers me a little bit quicker, because last time I sent him an email like that, I got an answer back like 14 months later. He was like,
he's probably not going to answer you until next year anyway.
All right, but it's a good question. All right, we'll have to take a look at that. So his suggestion is that the Jewish people are getting ready to develop an army that's going to be the future of the conquering power for Bnei Yisrael. Now, the problem is like this. If he's going to create an army, he knows that he has two factions that he's dealing with in the Jewish people. Who are those factions?
Bnei
Leah and their Bnei Rachel. Right now, if you were to look at the Bnei Leah and the Bnei Rachel and try to have two armies, what would end up happening? Right, it would be a bad merger, meaning it would be like if you have like a really big company, right? Like, and then you try to like take this like teeny company and say like, no, we could be partners. As soon as they enter into the partnership, what would happen? The big company would eat up the little company. So he says, what was Yaakov's goal? Yaakov's goal was to try to make this work. So what's the first thing he does? He turns to the Bnei Rachel and says, Ephraim u'Menashe, right? You're going to be the Kahal Amim. It's going to be Binyamin and Ephraim and Menashe. So now what's the score? It's not...
9-3.
Well, let's say it's 6-3, because the other, right, the other four of them, they don't count, right? Who is it?
The Bnei Shvachos.
Right, they're like... Yeah,
but that kid would probably go with Rachel, because they were just as second class to as Bnei Rachel.
Right, that's possible. But so he says, so now you're at 6-3. And Ephraim, by the way, is the most powerful of all the army generals in the initial Jewish history, because who's the leader that conquers the land of Israel?
Yeshua.
Who's from Shevet Ephraim. But now Yaakov is not done. What does Yaakov do? Yaakov then says, wait a second, I'm going to knock out who?
Reuben and Shimon.
And Levi. Because when you look at their brachos, right away, he knocks out Reuven, you're not good. Shimon, Levi, you're not good. Which now makes the score what?
3-3.
And basically what he does is he creates two armies of 3-3. Now, if you think that that's a little bit like hokey and you don't fully believe it, so if you take a look at how the Degalim lay out, so what do you have? It's who's Yehuda partnered with? Yehuda goes with Yisachar and Zvulun, which is not necessarily intuitive that you would put him with the younger two brothers. And then Ephraim, Menashe, and Binyamin are the opposite. They both fled. One is on the east side and one is on the west side. And then who's right behind? And then Dan, Asher, and Naphtali. Where does Reuven and Shimon go?
Reuven goes
they're dumped with God, right? One of the B'nai Ashfachos. What Yaakov is doing is, Yaakov is evening the score. Now, why does Yaakov do this? This is, I think, the beauty of Yaakov's attempt. Yaakov is attempting to not only create two armies who will conquer the land of Israel and be able to fulfill this nevuah that he had back in Luz, but he's trying to do more than that. He's trying to get rid of the tension between Leah and Rachel. And that's his goal. His deathbed goal is to reduce or remove the tension that had been there for all of time. And that's why the Medrash ends by telling us that this is actually the way they traveled in the desert was also how they carried Yaakov's Aron back from Mitzrayim to the land of Canaan. The goal at this point in time was to try to bury all the hatchets and all the frustration and all the tension that had been there for all these years, so that when Yaakov dies, that could also die with him. That's the hope. Does it fully happen? Probably.
Oh, he tees up the split in Eretz Yisrael. You got Malchus Yehuda against Malchus Ephraim.
It's going to come back up, and then it's going to be, right, it will be, that truly is what Ephraim versus Yehuda, which is Yosef again against Yehuda. But for a while, at least in the conquest of the land of Israel, it's supposed to be done in a way that's supposed to be peaceful, removing the tension between the two factions within the brothers. That is, says Rabbi Shalom, Yaakov's goal. And maybe to a certain extent, he's able to accomplish that on some level for some time.